Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on Friday, the 18th of November, the year 2011. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll be talking to UAS Evening and Egan presenter Nicholas Glennon today. We'll also we would be talking to Haynes writer Heather Lindy, but she couldn't get here in time for the interview, but she will be at Hearthside Books tomorrow. Pete Griffin will be here with details about Saturday's celebration event at the Mininauga Glacier Visitor Center. Chris Cairns from NAMI will be here to talk about Saturday's International Survivors of Suicide Day. That writer's Almanac Music and more today on a Juneau afternoon. The forecast for tonight looks like cloudy skies, low temperatures 5 to 13 degrees above zero, locally windy weather, clear cloudy skies predicted for tomorrow morning, then becoming sunny.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The so-called Congressional Super Committee that's looking to cut more than $1 trillion from the debt has less than a week to release a proposal. If it fails, federal support for tribes could see a big budget cut. Matt Laszlo reports from Washington, D.C.
The special panel has less than a week to find more than $1 trillion in budget savings, but the two sides remain at an impasse. If they fail, all budget items, including tribal budgets for crime fighting, education, and health care, face the potential of around an 8% budget cut. Republicans put an offer of approximately $250 billion in new tax revenues on the table, but they insisted on extending tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans. Maryland Democratic Congressman Chris Van Hollen is on the committee. He says to reach a deal, Republicans need to move more towards the middle.
They said that they were not going to go anywhere beyond the totally unbalanced proposal they had on the table.
Republicans say their budget outline is the only serious proposal that's been laid out so far, and they say it's time for Democrats to compromise. The supercommittee has until Wednesday to reach a deal, or $1.2 trillion will get cut from the Pentagon, tribal governments, and other programs. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Parts of the Dakotas are under winter storm watches for Friday night and Saturday. Several reservations are also bracing for the first significant snow of the season. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Weather officials are looking at a fast-moving but powerful storm that is building in the Rocky Mountains. The Cheyenne River and Pine Ridge reservations in Sisseton, Wahpeton, and Oyate in South Dakota and the Standing Rock Reservation between South and North Dakota are in line for possible significant snow. Jeff Johnson is a meteorologist in Rapid City.
We should start seeing snow developing and becoming quite heavy at times late tonight and into Saturday morning. Snow should taper off sometime by Saturday afternoon, but it does look like several areas could receive 6 inches or more of snow accumulation.
The watch area also includes the Crow Creek and Lower Brule reservations in south-central South Dakota. Officials say a brief cold period will follow the snowstorm. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
Kansas Governor Sam Brownback issues a proclamation apologizing to tribes for past mistreatments, including forced relocation. According to the Associated Press, he signed the apology this week. It was part of celebrations commemorating 150 years of statehood. Brownback is a former U.S. senator who was behind a similar federal apology signed by President Obama last year. Tribes at the signing ceremony accepted the apology and hope for greater relations with the state. In Canada, the federal government announced funding to address drinking water quality for First Nations. According to the CBC, Aboriginal Affairs Minister John Duncan announced Thursday $5.5 million to help improve infrastructure on Manitoba reserves. There are more than 150 First Nations under drinking water advisories. This week, the environmental organization EcoJustice gave the Canadian government an F for drinking water on its government report card. The organization emphasized the government's failure to protect First Nations communities. As provincial water quality standards were found to be otherwise good, it stops at the boundaries of reserves. The Aboriginal Affairs Minister and Manitoba First Nations leaders are expected to meet today. During this month in 2007, lawmakers in the U.S. House passed legislation to designate the day after Thanksgiving a day to pay tribute to American Indians. Legislation to designate the day was not passed by Congress and signed by the President until 2009. The Friday immediately following Thanksgiving Day of each year is now recognized as Native American Heritage Day. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
If you are a Native American who experienced discrimination from the USDA while trying to get a farm loan, you could get a payment of up to $50,000 or more. There will be meetings in locations around the country between July and December 2011 where you can get free legal help filing a claim. More details and a full schedule of meetings is available at IndianFarmClass.com or 1-888-233-5506.
Native Voice 1. The Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:06, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guests are here in the studio to talk about the University of Alaska Southeast Evening Edigan presentation tonight. Nicholas Gallinan and also Otis and TJ are in the studio to talk about some music we'll talk about later. Talk tonight is at 7 p.m. It's called New Culture in Edigan Lecture Hall. Nicholas and Otis and TJ, thank you very much for coming in on the station today.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you.
Thank you.
So first of all, Nicholas, who were some of the people who taught you carving in the first place?
I started working with my father, David Glennon. Grew up around him working at the bench. I've also worked with my uncle, Will Burkhart, Wayne Price, Jay Miller, Louis Menard, kind of anywhere I can get it.
So it's basically in the Sitka area?
Yeah, a lot of my training was in Sitka.
After one of your first shows of more traditional work in Vancouver in 2002, you started branching out. What gave you the confidence to try something new? Or who gave you the confidence?
It was more of being honest with myself as an artist, I suppose. So having a confidence in an honest voice and a creative voice and being able to take risks, that's when I started to realize that I needed to tune into that, I suppose, was, I guess, in 2002. I had a show in Vancouver, and we went down there and they interviewed us, and they photographed our work. And during the interview, I felt like I was being pressured to tell them they were pulling and trying to shape me and my work into a certain romantic ideal or perspective. So that was the first time where I stepped away and looked at what I was really doing and decided that I needed to inject more of my personal experience into the work. So
you've since gone into sculpture, video, and all sorts of interesting variety of media.
Yeah.
What attracts you to the different styles of media? What are you trying to say with your art?
I like to keep moving, so working with concepts has been the natural way that I tend to work, and that I'll develop an idea or a thought and then try to find the best outlet for it, the best creative medium to generate the piece and the dialogue with the audience through that. So it's exciting. I never know what's going to be in my studio. Sometimes I have a stack of Bibles. Sometimes I have an American flag or a taxidermied wolf or who knows. But that's what excites me.
What are you working on now?
I just finished a new album. I spent about the last year obsessing over it in the studio. I'm getting that out the door, and this winter I plan on putting that much energy into my visual art. So some new video work, some new sculpture and installation stuff.
You'd say you were obsessing on it for the past year or so. Are you a detail kind of guy?
I think it was just the experience of recording and the process and the journey of making music and sound. And you know, I worked with Otis here and a lot of other artists. Some of my favorite producers helped me had their hand in on the project. And it wasn't a controlling detail kind of sense. It was just music to me is a feeling, and when it's done or when it feels right, then it's kind of done. So
some artists, when they go in their studio, they need to be completely alone. They turn off the cell phone, turn off the TV and the radio. What's your working environment like?
It's different for every medium and every body of work, I suppose. So, music, definitely. I like to make music in solitude, unless there's other people that are partaking in the creative process. But Yeah, it depends. When I'm making those paper book sculptures, the process to me is not very exciting. I could have somebody else cutting paper for me, and I'd be happy about that. So
that is detail work.
Yeah.
Your talk tonight is called New Culture. Could you elaborate on that, please?
New Culture, it's just this idea of promoting my culture in a new light and allowing for it to grow and progress and not be restricted by romanticism or people's ideas of what the culture should or could only be. So, and that's what a lot of my visual work that I'll be discussing tonight expands upon that. So,
I guess, do you feel trapped by the way people might encourage your art in a specific way based on your culture?
Yeah, the consumption of indigenous art has a lot of social pressure from a lot of different areas, from economy of art, from the idea of preservation of culture. So it's not, I don't feel trapped, but I think that a lot of people stop at those places, and there's so much room to expand. I think that it's our job to continue to push. So
I'm talking to Nicholas Galliman, who's got an evening meeting and presentation tonight at 7 o'clock in the Eagan Lecture Hall at the University of Alaska Southeast. Tonight after the show, and also tomorrow night at the Alaskan Bar, is going to be a release party for your second CD. Could you describe your music, please?
This project?
Is it different than the first project?
Yeah, I think it's very different. I really did work with a wide range of musicians, from female vocalists. I'm trying to explain the project. I can't explain it. I think you just need to listen to it, and you can find it at silverjackson.com. But to me, I think it's an audible. It's a very audible project. It's something that you can put on and listen to when you're entertaining guests, when you're cooking dinner, when you're. I think it's smooth and diverse in its sound. So.
Mm-hmm. Does your visual art and your music both come from the same place?
Definitely not right now. Anyways, sometimes they might cross paths from time to time, but this last project, the music project of mine, music tends to come from more of an emotional aspect of my existence, I suppose, and perception of life. So a lot of music, to me, I can translate that to sound. A lot of the visual work that I've been creating is more of a dialogue, and a lot of that starts with thinking and putting my thoughts down on a pad, and then developing it at a kind of a slower and different rate. So.
In yesterday's Juno Empire, you talked about the creative conversation that's missing between an artist and their audience in an art exhibit and what happens in a live musical performance.
Just the immediacy of music. You're on a stage and you're giving energy and getting it back from an audience. When you create a piece of artwork, a lot of times the people that are going to see the artwork will never see you. You'll never meet them. You may never even like understand how they reacted or what they felt to that piece because you're not there for it. So that's what I was kind of speaking about, I suppose. So these lectures and talks are a great opportunity to be there with an audience.
You talked about the CD being one of your projects. Do you work on separate projects at a time, or do you concentrate on one project at each individual work?
Yeah, I think I definitely start several projects, especially in the visual art world. I'll start a series and hit on it when it's hot in my mind, and then I might leave it and be somewhere else doing something. So, but keeping them on rotation and continually feeding them or watering them, everything starts to blossom, and there's always something going on.
Also in the studio with me is Otis and TJ, two people who are involved in some of the music that's happening tonight and tomorrow night at the Alaskan Bar. Otis, could you talk about a little bit about your music, please?
I make a lot of experimental music. I cover pretty much all genres. I do a lot of hip-hop, a lot of production for, and songwriting for a lot of artists in Seattle, and a couple of people over on the East Coast. tonight at the Alaskan Bar, I'm gonna mix it up. It's gonna be pretty entertaining. A little bit of hip hop, a little bit of folk, a little bit of dance type music. It's gonna be a real party for Juno tonight. Yeah.
DJ.
Yeah, I have a local hip-hop group here called Diatribe Northwest. It's myself, I go by Manor, and DJ Judo. And we also have Nicole Church coming out. It's going to be a real versatile crowd and something for everybody. It's going to be a good time.
Church.
Yeah.
Tell me about Home Skillet.
Home Skillet Fest.
This was awesome.
Yeah, this is my favorite time of the year. I started Home Skillet Festival maybe 6-7 years ago. I actually started 8 years ago with just friends on a beach with a fire and music, and we expanded upon it. And it's a nonprofit. It's operated by a lot of wonderful people in Sitka, and local businesses support it and make it happen every year. Basically, we bring artists up from all over, and it's 2 days of music outdoors. Every genre that we don't really restrict it by the genre of music. So Otis came up last year. TJ was there twice now. Is it twice? Or is
last year? Yeah, last year. Just last year.
First year.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just beautiful. Music brings people together. And this festival definitely does that. So.
Yeah, now Otis is here.
Yeah.
I'm sick of Juno. I'm going everywhere in Alaska. That's the goal.
I've been talking to Nicholas Gallinan and also Otis and TJ about the UAS Evening at Eagle Lecture tonight about new culture. Starts at 7 o'clock in the Eagle Lecture Hall at the University of Alaska Southeast. Thank you so much for coming down to the station. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I can't think of anything. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Come to the lecture if you're around. Definitely come out to the Alaskan. Both evenings we'll be performing some great music with some great people.
All right, thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Our love is rainbows, sweet from the sky. It's on everybody, just the same. And I.
Thank you.
Nicholas Jackson performing, Nicholas Gallen and performing as Silver Jackson. He'll be speaking tonight at 7 o'clock of the evening at Egan Lecture Series in the Egan Lecture Hall, and performing music after that at the Alaskan Bar on Friday and Saturday. Here's some news. The Eagle Crest Ski Area will open for the 2011-2012 season on Friday, November 25th. With over 46 inches of new snow since November 12th, Eagle Crest is looking forward to one of the earliest and best opening days in recent memory. Again, Eagle Crest is opening up early on November 25th. Stay tuned to KTOO information for more information on that.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 18th of November, 2011. It's the birthday of the novelist and poet Margaret Atwood, born 1939 in Ottawa, Ontario. Her father, an entomologist, she spent a good deal of her childhood out in the woods with him as he did field work. Margaret Atwood said, "I grew up in the woods, outside of any social structures apart from those of my family, so I didn't absorb social structures through my skin the way many children do. If you grow up in a small town, you instinctively know who is who and what is what, and whom you can safely be contemptuous of." It was on this day, 1883, standard time zones were established in the United States and Canada. 4 time zones, 1 hour of solar time for each 15 degrees of longitude. Before that, towns and cities set their own time and drove people crazy, particularly the railroads. It's the birthday of the man who wrote, "I am the very model of a modern major general. I have information, vegetable, animal, and mineral. I know the kings of England, and I quote the fights historical from Marathon to Waterloo in order categorical. I'm very well acquainted, too, with matters mathematical. I understand equations, both the simple and quadratical. About binomial theorem, I'm teeming with a lot of news, with many cheerful facts about the square of the hypotenuse." W.S. Gilbert, of Gilbert and Sullivan, born London, 1836. 2 men with very different personalities. Gilbert, who loved absurd stories. Sullivan preferred realism. Gilbert, who poked fun at the upper classes. And Sullivan, who longed to be accepted by them. Nonetheless, they wrote 14 comic operas together, including HMS Pinafore, The Pirates of Penzance, and The Mikado. Here's a poem for today by Margaret Atwood, In the Secular Night. In the secular night, you wander around alone in your house. It's 2:30. Everyone has deserted you. Or this is your story. You remember it from being 16, when the others were out somewhere, having a good time, or so you suspected, and you had to babysit. You took a large scoop of vanilla ice cream and filled up the glass with grape juice and ginger ale, and put on Glenn Miller with his big band sound, and lit a cigarette and blew the smoke up the chimney, and cried for a while because you were not dancing, and then danced by yourself, your mouth circled with purple. Now, 40 years later, things have changed, and it's baby lima beans. It's necessary to reserve a secret vice. This is what comes from forgetting to eat at the stated meal times. You simmer them carefully, drain, add cream and pepper, and amble up and down the stairs, scooping them up with your fingers right out of the bowl, talking to yourself out loud. You'd be surprised if you got an answer, but that part will come later. There is so much silence between the words you say. You say, the sensed absence of God and the sensed presence amount to much the same thing, only in reverse. You say, I have too much white clothing. You start to hum. Several hundred years ago, this could have been mysticism or heresy. It isn't now. Outside, there are sirens. Someone's been run over. The century grinds on. A poem by Margaret Atwood, In the Secular Night, from Morning in the Burned House, published by Houghton Mifflin Company and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, partners with the National Endowment for the Arts in Poetry Out Loud, a national poetry recitation contest for high school students. More information at poetryfoundation.org. Written by Holly Vanderhaar. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Programming is supported in part by McDonald's, now serving the McRib sandwich. McDonald's, open daily on Trout Street in the Valley.
Looking for something for your child to do November 21st? Take aim with Discovery Southeast as we learn archery skills in the morning before heading to the West Glacier area for an afternoon of nature-inspired exploration. This Discovery Day should be a hit. From 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., your child can enjoy the day off in a fun and educational way. Call 463-1500 or go to discoverysoutheast.org for more information. That's Monday, November 21st, for a Discovery Day of nature exploration and adventure.
Music of Willie and Lobo, or Lobo and Willie, depending on when you caught them in their career. Time is 3:30, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Your Crimson Bear varsity hockey team is looking to rebound from its series against the East High Thunderbirds with two game series against the Kenai Central High School Cardinals tonight and also Saturday night at the Treadwell Arena. Something going on this Saturday is going to be the storytelling event called Telebration Saturday at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center from 6:30 until 9 p.m. About 8:30 or so, maybe go a little bit longer. Here's my guest, Pete Griffin, to talk more about it. Pete, thank you for being on the air today.
Hey, Jeff. Great to be here. So, a Telebration, it's a celebration of storytelling that started, back in 1998. A storyteller back east in Connecticut by the name of J.G. Pinkerton thought it would be nice to have a kind of a standard one night a year where everybody got together to tell their stories. And that spread, that was 1988, so here it is 23 years later. Telebration has spread to six continents, I believe. Somebody apparently had a Telebration down in Antarctica last year. But 40 states, 30 different countries, and I think there's Telebration going on in 300 different communities around the country this year where folks get together in formal or informal circumstances and just tell each other stories. It's really a terrific event.
You're the Alaska State Liaison for the National Storytelling Network. Can you tell me about the network, please?
The National Storytelling Network was it originated. I'm not sure the year, but it started out as a national association of storytelling. But they are storytellers that are bonded together, and they do workshops, training storytellers, master classes by master storytellers. They have producers that get together and will help folks learn how to put on a storytelling festival. So I've been a member of this organization, I think since about 2003, and this year they needed a liaison for storytellers in the state of Alaska, so I volunteered to do that. I've learned a lot from those folks. It's been really great.
And you did some storytelling yourself down near Disneyland a little while ago.
That's right. Last year in Los Angeles, there's an annual conference with workshops and presentations and actual storytelling sessions. I had an hour to myself standing up in front of an audience of strangers, telling them stories about the mistakes I made during a 36-year government career and what I learned from those mistakes.
Do you want to start now?
Pardon that?
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh.
Tell me about the Telebration, which is going on tomorrow, Saturday night, from 6:30 until about 8:30 p.m. at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center.
Well, this is our annual event in Juneau. I think we've had it at the Visitor Center for, the last 7 or 8 years.
One year got snowed out.
That's right. One year we got snowed out, and we postponed it until the middle of the winter. I think we called it the Hibernation Telebration. So that's... starts at 6:30. We've got 7 folks lined up, local Juneau storytellers, and we've also this year we've added a little bit different aspect to the storytelling. There was a digital storytelling storytelling class going on at the City Museum, put on by Alicia Jones, and she had asked if some of her students could present their work that night, and thought, well, why not? So I think we've got 3 or 4 1 to 2 minute short little videos of people who have done a personal story of their own, and they've put it, and it's in a format where you could put it on your Facebook page, I guess. It's something new. So we're going to take a look at those, and Alicia's going to be there and kind of explain the process and introduce the stories that these folks have done. So that'll take, maybe 10 minutes or so, and then we'll get on to the storytelling where folks are standing up in front of the audience and telling their stories.
Who are the storytellers?
Storytellers, Grace Elliott, MJ Grand, Patrick Murphy, Patricia Hull, Sheila Fisher, Pat McClear, and I'll be there telling my own story. We've got stories that from old times. Pat McClear is going to do The Baker's Daughter, which is an old English tale, and it's the source of Ophelia's line in Hamlet, where she says, they say the owl was a baker's daughter. Lord, we know not what we are, but we know not what we may be. And that's an interesting line. We know not yet what we may be. Sheila Fisher, Sheila transferred here from Tennessee, and she was at the first storytelling festival held in America in years. I think that was back in the 1970s in Jonesboro, Tennessee. So that was kind of the rebirth of storytelling in America. So she's going to recount her experiences there. Patrick Murphy, he always has a personal story of growing up in Iowa, and I think last year it was about Bob the cow dog, which was terrific. Had us in stitches. Patricia Hull is going to do an old folk tale about a prince who is looking for a bride. And he poses the question, what is the most indispensable thing to a king? And he goes out in the kingdom, and whoever comes up with the best answer will be his princess bride. So that should be a lot of fun.
Is it an event for all ages?
It is. These are stories that adults are going to enjoy, but there's nothing in there that the kids won't enjoy either, although sometimes some of the humor might be, it might not be at a six-year-old level, it might be at the 12-year-old's level. So, but there will still be, it is a family type of event. So it ought to be great. There'll be free cookies and some punch. So terrific.
And the event is free other than you're taking donations?
We will accept donations. It helped to defray the cost of the cookies and the punch that the storytellers all throw in to get for the crowd.
And your story, are you going to talk about your career as a public servant?
My story this year is going to be about my fishing buddy, my mother-in-law Marge, and her first king salmon that she ever caught.
This all starts at the Menlo Glacier Visitor Center about 6:30, but you should get there early because it seems like a small venue, and I don't know, it fills up fairly quickly.
We will squeeze everybody in, by golly, if we have to have them standing in back. It's in front of the fireplace. It's a wonderful venue. Really appreciate the folks in the Forest Service who are providing this to us.
And Pete Griffin from the National Storytelling Network, also the local people focused celebration. Anything you'd like to add, I might have forgotten to ask?
Oh, gosh. Come and visit, and be sure to tell your kids stories. We'll be right back.
didn't need anyone but me. I sincerely thought I was so complete. Look how wrong you can be. The women I've known I wouldn't let tie my shoe. They wouldn't give you the time of day. But the slit-eyed lady knocked me off my feet. God, I was glad I found you. And if there was words I could tell to you, to have you on the way down the road, I couldn't quote you no Dickens, Shelley O'Keefe.
Time is 3:43 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guest is here to talk about International Survivors of Suicide Day, which is being observed tomorrow at 2 p.m. at Holy Trinity Episcopal Church. Chris Cairns from NAMI and also Sandra Sexton-Jones, who's a private therapist and also certified grief counselor. Thank you for being on the air with me today.
Thanks, Jeff.
So tell me about International Survivors of Suicide Day, please, Chris.
So International Survivors of Suicide Day is an annual event that is sponsored by the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. It's been going on for about 13 years, and it's a supportive gathering opportunity for survivors of suicide loss, anybody who has experienced a bereavement due to suicide is welcome to come and join us. And basically what we do is we show a video that the AFSP, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, produces at the same time as locations all around, across the globe. I believe it's in about 30 countries, and there's over 100 locations just within the United States. And the idea being that survivors of suicide loss, which is, you know, can be a profoundly alienating demographic, can feel like there are other people that understand the experiences that they've gone through and the grief that they're experiencing.
Mm-hmm. Tell me more about the video, if you could, please.
Sure. The video is facilitated by a psychologist, and there's a panel of survivors, and they discuss ways in which they coped with their loss and ways in which they're moving through their grieving process.
Mm-hmm. Sandra, what are some of the causes and possibly prevention of suicide?
Some of the causes of suicide?
Mm-hmm.
That's a myriad of situations and possibilities. You know, we know that depression is associated with some cases. It's not associated with all cases. We know that for teenagers, impulse control, they get angry, they decide they're going to do something and act on it impulsively. Adults sometimes are, you know, perhaps experiencing difficulties in their life that they think that there's no way out of, and they elect, you know, to complete suicide, to kill themselves. So there's no one answer that fits every suicide.
How does Alaska rank?
2010 is the most recent year that there are statistics available, and right now we have the highest average per capita.
Tell me some more about your findings in grief counseling, Sandra.
Findings? I'm a survivor. I'm 25 years post my husband's death. One of the things that I have learned through the years is that, you know, every survivor's path to recovery or to you know, putting their life back together is different. It's different for everyone. And I think one of the important things that sometimes survivors think is that they won't ever recover. And that's not true. You learn to accommodate what has happened in your life and you live forward. But it takes a while to get to the point where you understand that you can live forward and have a good life. There's a lot of stigma attached to suicide. You know, finger pointing, blaming, you know, particularly in families, that happens a lot. I see that a lot when I work with survivors. You know, it's can break families up. There's a high divorce rate in families, particularly where there are children that kill themselves. So it's, you know, each person that comes in, walks into my office, we sit down, we talk about the loss, and we take it from there in terms of, you know, helping them. I assist in helping them walk their path.
What are some of the right things and what are some of the wrong things that friends and family of survivors should deal with?
I think sometimes, you know, people make unintentional mistakes. You know, if it's a child, you know, typically I've heard clients have told me about, you know, people tell me I can have another child. The best advice that I give anyone that is around a survivor is to listen to them and to not make judgments, to not point fingers, but just to listen. And let them express whatever it is that they need to express and to talk about whatever they need to talk about in a safe atmosphere.
Why is NAMI involved, Chris?
NAMI works very closely with the Juneau Community Suicide Prevention Task Force. The most recent data suggests that about 90% of people who commit suicide have a diagnosable mental illness, although it is not always diagnosed at the time of death. And NAMI is devoted towards improving the lives of anyone who lives with mental illness or family members of people who have mental illness. So I think it's a natural fit.
I'm talking to Sandra Sexton-Jones and also Chris Cairns about International Survivors of Suicide Day, which is being observed tomorrow at 2 p.m. at Holy Trinity Episcopal Church. What are some of the other participating organizations?
SEARCH is also involved, which is Southeast Regional Health Consortium, and the Juneau Suicide Prevention Task Force, as well as NAMI.
How about resources on and offline?
Please check out our websites. The Juneau Community Suicide Prevention Task Force has a website, JuneauSuicidePrevention.org, and that has a list of resources. We also do a suicide prevention program modeled after a lecture given by a visiting psychologist by the name of Dr. Bob Bauer. And if you are worried about anyone in your family, I would suggest that you attend our free program showing of that lecture the first Tuesday of every month at United Way at 5:15.
The other thing that I would suggest is don't be afraid to ask anyone if they're thinking of killing themselves. I ask it very directly because it shows that you're not afraid to ask and sit down and talk with someone and then help them get the help that they may need.
There must be a tremendous feeling of guilt by the survivors.
Sometimes there is, because if it's a family member or a friend, you sit and you often wonder, what did I miss? What did I not see? Why couldn't I have stopped this? So, yes, there's a lot of guilt.
And that's just as valid as any other feeling?
Absolutely.
What are some of the other common feelings that people have?
Some of the common feelings that I hear about, and even actually some of the ones that I experienced, what we call our assumptive world, the world that we thought was in place, the world that we believed in, is suddenly just shredded, and, you know, thrown in our lap. And so, you know, you wonder if you're ever going to have a normal life. You wonder if you'll ever be able to, you know, really live your life to the fullest. There's guilt, there's fear, and sometimes you don't know where that fear is coming from. If you have children, then you, if it's an adult, a parent that has killed themselves, then you wonder if your children, if they have problems, will they use that, you know, killing themselves as a resource? That's a common theme that you hear about. If it's a partner, then you wonder, you know, why didn't I pick up on this? Why didn't I see this? You know, why didn't they come and talk to me? And sometimes adults talk and sometimes they don't. Sometimes kids talk about it and sometimes they don't. They just act. So we don't detect everyone that may be suicidal because they don't talk about it. We like to think that, you know, we can talk to people and they will open up to us. Sometimes they will, sometimes they won't.
The phrase, time heals all wounds, is there something you could do to accentuate the timing process, or is that something you want to do to speed it along, the grief process?
It makes its own time. You know, there's not really a way that you can heal the problem, I mean, fast forward, and there's not a way that you can rush through it. You know, we know that there are developmental stages, in even if you're adult, there are developmental stages that you go through in this process. There's the first year where you have all of the first anniversaries, the first birthdays, the first significant events in your family. Those are all really difficult to get through that first year, and sometimes the second. So it's not like you look 4 months down the road and say, okay, everything is okay, I'm just fine. It really doesn't work that way. It's a process.
I've been talking to Sandra Sexton-Jones and also Chris Cairns about International Survivors of Suicide Day, which is being observed Saturday at 2 p.m. at Holy Trinity Episcopal Church. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I would really encourage, if there are suicide survivors in the community, if they you know, hear about this, I would really encourage them to come and join that community. It is typically, in my experience, it has been a very warm and comforting service, and I would really encourage them to come down and experience it with other survivors.
But if you're just not comfortable coming, the webcast, the lecture that we will be showing, is available online at afsp.org.
And Chris and Sandra, thank you very much for coming down to the station today and talking about International Survivors of Suicide Day again tomorrow at 2 p.m. at Holy Trinity Episcopal Church at the corner of 4th and Gold Streets. Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you. Thank you.
3:58, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTUO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Zweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Huna at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTUO on K210 AS 89.9. Also online at www.ktuo.org. Coming up next Monday on a Juneau afternoon, we'll talk with Lizzie Eakins and Mary Lou King about favorite trails in Juneau. Jen Rumble and Lori Watt will be here to give us let us check up on next Saturday's, it's a week from this Saturday's Chicks versus Geezers hockey game. Those are the Riders Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and more next Monday at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. So the forecast for tonight, decreasing clouds, low temperatures 9 to 17 degrees above, except about 6 degrees above in wind-sheltered areas. Forecast for Saturday, partly cloudy skies in the morning, then becoming sunny. Forecast for Sunday, partly cloudy skies with a slight chance of snow. High temperatures around 21 degrees. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Thank you for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon today, and have a great weekend.
Hi, I'm William Todd Hunt, Music Director for Juneau Lyric Opera's upcoming presentation of La Boheme. We've been working hard on our performance of Puccini's most popular opera, and we can't wait to share it with you. The curtain will part, the baton will rise, and music will fill McPheeters Hall. Join us for any or all of the November 18th, 19th, 25th, 26th, and December 1st and 2nd performances. Tickets are available at the usual locations and at JuneauOpera.org.
Time is 4 o'clock. You're tuned to KTUO News in Juneau.
Healthcare has always been close to his heart and an issue where he has spent an inordinate amount of time.
Newt Gingrich wants to repeal healthcare laws his own think tank once promoted.
Today is Friday, November 18th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Guy Raz.
And I'm Alyssa Block. Gingrich earned millions for proposing health policies that are now law.
Also this hour, tension in Egypt between military leaders and newly empowered political parties.
And a video game satire that became an unlikely hit.
A programmer wanted to prove that Farmville is designed to suck money from players, so he invented Cow Clicker.
You know, a game in which all you do is click on a cow, and that's it. Maybe you pay for the privilege to click on a